Well, the next governor of Colorado just tweeted out a moment ago, Trevor Story, with three Trevor exclamation Story. Points, and then a link to a story about Trevor Story's 505-foot home run yesterday, which was absolutely ridiculous.
The Trevor ending story.
It was fun. That was a fun night. And Jared Polis, big Trevor Story guy. Big fan.
It was a fun week.
It was a fun week for Rockies fans of the normal variety, and fun week for Rockies fans of the future governor variety. So, hey, welcome in with that. It's the Purple Dinosaur Podcast from the good folks at PurpleRow.com. My name is Tyler Vaughn.
And I'm Anthony Masterson, and it's been a minute since we've talked to you, like a full minute.
I'm actually recording this podcast outdoors today.
What?
I'm being forced to stay at my mom's house while I'm working on the house that I just purchased to live in, but I can't really live in there yet. So I've been staying at my mom's house ever since I got back. I basically have not had a home since the end of July,
right,
which is exciting. And so I've been staying at my mom's house, but my mom has a great patio, and it's like 72 degrees here today. So I'm sitting out on the patio recording an outdoor podcast.
Did your adorable dog remember you when you came back from your travels?
She did. And she's passed out like within arm's length of me right now.
Good.
Just laying
good
on the patio. She's pretty great. I think she's gradually figuring out that the new house is a place that we're going to live, because she, you know, like, I would think it's probably pretty confusing. She's laying in our old place, and I'm packing up all of our stuff, and all of a sudden the place is empty, and then I take her out of it, and we haven't seen it since. And when you're a dog, I would think that's rather confusing. And so, but I've taken her over to the new place, like, while they've been putting in new windows this week, and we're going to start painting and stuff tomorrow, and then ripping up carpet and redoing the hardwood floors, and then, you know, like, fully moving in next week. And the dog, I've been taking her over there every day, and she's gradually started, like, day after day exploring, like, a little bit more of the yard, like, sniffing everything. And I think she's slowly figuring out, like, oh, this is going to be – this is mine now. Like, I right. own this place. I'm the dog.
Right.
So that's cool.
Well. Yeah, I mean, the dog's going to be, you know, paying rent, I assume.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
I mean, at some point, she has to pull her weight.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know what else she expects. I'm just going to keep giving her food for free, shelter, love, the essentials kit.
I'm sorry. This is 2018. We don't do socialism here.
Exactly. Exactly. This is America. This is America where you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you don't give a shit about the person next to you. So welcome in. It has been a minute, as Anthony noted. I was gone for 3 weeks. We managed to squeeze a couple episodes out of the old PDP while I was gone. And then last week, I was doing broadcast for the medal games of the Women's Baseball World Cup on Friday. Which
got a lot of traction, by the way. People were really paying attention.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. That U.S.-Canada game was great for bronze, and the U.S. fell apart in the 10th, and Canada ended up getting bronze. But it was interesting to see what the reactions were around the country for the Women's Baseball World Cup, because obviously, you know, you're going to have your idiots. But I think the people who took it seriously, who are not idiots, saw, you know, there's some pretty good baseball that gets played, and also, why are we not better at it? And I think that started a conversation as to, you know, why are the resources not devoted to women's baseball, and why is it that women are just told, oh, you have to play softball, that's the girls' sport. Like, that's ridiculous.
I mean, you saw some of the videos that you guys were posting, like, they can play, man. Like,
shit talent, man.
Dontrell Willis even posted, I think, Rob Freeman, the pitching ninja.
Yeah.
He posted a video of one of the pitchers, and Dontrell Willis saw it.
And retweeted
and said, I need her jersey immediately.
Gortarez, she is one of my favorite baseball players that I have ever watched play the game of baseball ever. Anywhere, at any level, men, women, she is one of the most entertaining, fluid, smooth, mechanically perfect, amazing baseball players. I actually saw her getting on the bus after a game they played in the opening round and walked up to her, and I was like, I just have to tell you how much fun I have watching you play. Like, you're so entertaining.
That's awesome.
To watch. And she seemed very, very uncomfortable with the attention of somebody telling her how good she was. Like, just a really humble, quiet athlete.
I was also like 15, right? I mean, like, you
badass.
Know, like,
yeah, I think she's like, she's one of the elder statesmen at like 21.
Okay.
But no, she's amazing. And yeah, the fact that Dr. Willis, that was the the fact that that was the player. I remember 2 years ago when I did the Women's World Cup in Korea, I remember raving about Jade Gortarz on the mound and like her mechanics, her delivery, her arm action, and that Rob Friedman singled her out for one of the gifts from the Women's World Cup. I was like, oh, I feel so validated. What a what a player crush I've had on this shortstop for a while, and when she pitches. And then for Dodger Wilson to be like, I need her jersey. That was just so awesome. It was so awesome. And it was cool, too, because, like, behind the scenes, when we see that at WBSC for an event, like, that gives us so much more legitimacy when when people like Dontro Willis are the ones to speak up and be like, hey, this player is awesome. That's great for us. Like, we're already out there pushing it, but when people start taking it seriously who have done it at the highest level and take it seriously from major American media outlets, that's so big for us. And that was cool. And that game was great. The World Championship game wasn't as good. I mean, Japan is just so good, and they're just so far and away better than everybody else. They just kind of rolled Chinese Taipei, which is, you know, what Japan has done for the last eight editions in the tournament. Six straight now, actually. Six straight World Championships since the U.S. won the first two. But it was fun, and it was great. It was a great few weeks. The U15 Baseball World Cup actually had a Denver area kid in that one, and that was pretty cool to see. So it was, the U.S. in that one, I think the way it has just rolled through international baseball in recent years on the men's side, I'll be interested to see what happens when that pendulum swings back. Because right now, like, a lot of the international baseball powers are down. Like, Cuba, obviously, is way down over the last decade or so. Venezuela with all the turmoil there. It's really just Korea and Japan that seem to be in any sort of position to challenge the United States. And that was not the case in U15s. It wasn't the case in U18s. U12s, the U.S. dominated. WBC, the U.S. dominated. So I'll be interested to see. Everything's cyclical in sports, and when it starts swinging back in international baseball, I'll be interested to see why exactly that is and what it is about the other programs that catches up with the United States. But
U.S. won the last WBC.
Yeah, first
that's
time
hopefully a start. Ever. You know,
first time ever. So, it's it was a fun few weeks. I was definitely ready to be home, and I am very excited to be home and watching a first place baseball team.
First place baseball.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes. I got a text, and we actually have an Ask PDP, I noticed, that is this same story. But one of my lifelong friends, since high school, so almost lifelong, Pat Kelly, who I really got to tell Pat to put up a picture on Twitter, because whenever he tweets at us, I'm like, oh, who is this troll? Because he's just got the default Avi, which is no longer an egg, but it's still egg-ish. And then I'm like, oh, that's Pat, who I've been friends with since the first day of high school. But Pat tweeted at me or texted me today, was getting on a flight. Pat went to CSU and worked for the CSU video program for a while, and he's coming out here to watch. He also worked at Arkansas for a little while, and Arkansas and CSU play this weekend. So Pat's coming out here for the game, and he currently lives in Boise. And he said when he was getting on the flight this morning, walking through TSA, and he was wearing a Coors Field T-shirt. And the TSA guy, after checking his ID, says, go Dodgers. Right. And Pat said, I heard it just in time to turn around and say, yeah, 1.5 games back. And I was like, attaboy, Pat. That's fantastic. Very proud. Very proud of a lifelong friend. He was always one of those guys who he always had the comeback.
Right.
Not always, but when he did, it was like cutting and devastating.
And you're like, oh, wow.
I just got blown. So sucks to be you, TSA guy.
John Mulaney would say that he was an eighth grader, right?
Yeah, basically. He was a teenager. He's just an upcoming teenager.
Yeah, though, he always knew what to say to make the other person feel just horrible about
themselves. That's the thing I'm sensitive about.
Yeah.
Your, my, and our Colorado Rockies 1.5 games up on the National League West Division. The Los Angeles Dodgers hit town tomorrow night for
a big series.
Pivotal, as they might say. Crucial, as they might say. Three-game series at Coors Field. Tomorrow night, we're recording this obviously on Thursday the 6th, is as good of a baseball matchup as I can remember in September at Coors Field. John Gray against Clayton Kershaw with a game and a half separating the Rockies and Dodgers.
I mean, this is what you came for, as Rihanna or somebody probably once said. Paid for? I don't do hip-hop.
Me neither.
This is probably one of the biggest series that has ever taken place at Coors Field, non-playoffs, of course. First of all, the Rockies have not been in first place this late in the season since 1995. And they're coming up on, and that was a strike-shortened season. The season started late because of the 94 strike. And so right about the amount of games or whatever they have played, the Rockies are about right there in terms of the most games through a season they have been in first place. The last time they were in first place, September 26th, 1995, they had a half-game lead on the Dodgers in that season. But here we are, a game and a half. It is September 6th as we are recording this. I mean, the Dodgers coming to town, Clayton Kershaw. The Dodgers moved Clayton Kershaw's start back from the Met series to this series because the Dodgers know that this is a playoff series. And that's the most important thing. The Rockies aren't just some middling little team. They're not just, you know, some team that's going to blow it. And they might. There's still 3 weeks left in the season. We don't know what's going to happen the next 3 weeks. But the fact that the Dodgers shuffled their rotation to put their best guns against the Rockies in this series proves to me that the Dodgers think the Rockies are for real.
Yep. Which is a pretty awesome feeling. Like, it actually kind of reminds me somewhat of another thing going on this weekend. The University of Colorado football team goes to play my University of Nebraska football team, which will be playing its first game of the season because lightning has ruined my life the last
time. Oh, yeah, trust me. Trust me, man. Like, that game was on Fox last week.
Yeah.
And those Rob Stone and Dave Wansa and all those guys, they had to fill for 7 hours because of that game.
Yeah, it was terrific. And Tim Brando, I was all excited to have Tim Brando on the call, and then
filling for that long is a live TV nightmare.
You and I used to just throw it back to the studio. We'd get like 3 minutes into a weather delay and be like, yeah, no, we're not going to do this. We'll just go back to ESPN Radio for the next 2 hours. So this weekend, a matchup. But here's the thing. CU fans treat Nebraska fans are the gift from Mean Girls, Why Are You So Obsessed With Me, to CU fans. Nebraska fans don't care about CU, have never cared about CU, have never viewed CU as a rival. CU was always like, CU was like the cute thing that came along that wanted to act like a big boy when they divided the conference into two divisions and Nebraska and Oklahoma didn't play each other annually anymore. That was CU to Nebraska. It was like, all right, well, this will tide us over until we get one of those crossover years where we get to play Oklahoma again. But for CU fans, Nebraska is the only show in town. Like, they try to make a rivalry with CSU, which is just like, it's just like two three-legged dogs trying to beat each other in a race. Like, nobody cares about it, and it's sort of sad. But with Nebraska, like, Nebraska never had, and admittedly, there were years where Nebraska very much had to pay attention to CU, but they were very few and far between. That's what this season feels like for the Rockies fans. Have always hated the Dodgers. The Dodgers have always been somewhat the standard you have to measure up to. Always hated the Dodgers, always wanted to be able to beat the Dodgers. Even dating back, I don't think anybody on their right mind would call this a rivalry between the Rockies and Dodgers.
They've been the standard for how long? I mean, even when the Giants were winning World Series, the Giants weren't always the best team in the NL West.
No, not at all. The Giants were wild card teams a couple of those years. So when you look at throughout franchise history, the Dodgers have always been kind of the gold standard in the National League West, and the Rockies have always wanted to measure up to them. The Dodgers and pretty much everybody else in the division has always looked at the Rockies as the little brother, and deservedly so.
Yeah,
and
they've never won a title.
Rarely ever been relevant. But this year feels like the year in which the big brother has to pay attention to the little brother. And that has happened from time to time, but not very often. It happened from time to time in college football. It's happened from time to time with Nebraska and Colorado. It's happened from time to time with, you know, Alabama and whoever else in that conference. Every once in a while, they get knocked off by an Ole Miss or
Georgia. Yeah.
Like, that type of stuff comes along, but it doesn't come along very often. And when you are the little brother, it feels so much more important. The fact that a team has shifted Clayton Kershaw back in order to face your number one because they know how big this series is. We're not in that position very often as Rockies fans. And that's what makes this weekend and this season feel so much different.
Yeah. And to use CU again, it's like CU still talking about that one time they beat Arizona basketball like 7 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Which is the same thing they do with the Nebraska game from 2001. Like, when you hold on to one moment for 17 years. But
it's like the Padres in game 163, you know?
Like, exactly. Like, that to an extent, the Rockies are that. I was looking at, there's that commercial that runs on Fox Sports, Rocky Mountain, Root Sports, AT&T Sports Network, that is all of like the great moments in Rockies history. And it's like, you know, EY Fry's homer, and then Bichette's mm-hmm. homer in the 95 opener at Coors Field. And then, like, every other moment is from 07.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, that's it. Like, basically yeah. it as a Rockies fan. Like, you pretty much have the one thing to hold on to. But
Helton's homer off of Saito.
Yeah. Yeah, Helton's homer off of Saito. The NLCS, the final out, obviously, against the D-backs. And then it's like they have Nolan's homer from the cycle game on Father's Day last year. And, like, that's the only thing over the last 11 years of Rockies baseball. Because that's just what it's been. But that's the whole point of this, is these moments don't come along very often. And the Rockies right now have one of these moments. Starting tomorrow, this is a series that, if it goes well, you'll remember for a very long time. The Rockies have won 5 straight, the longest winning streak in the National League. They are unbeaten so far in the month of September. They are 77-62, a game and a half up on the 76-64 Dodgers, which means they have the second best record of division leaders in the National League. Now, oddly enough, they have like the fifth best yeah. record in the National League.
Yeah.
But this is different. The fact that the Rockies right now are in the driver's seat, if the Rockies continue to take care of business, they win the division. That's 13, where you sit right now.
13 of their next 16 games are against the Dodgers and Diamondbacks.
Oh, boy.
That's what you play for this time. This is
yep,
why
exactly.
the MLB put an unbalanced schedule, so you play more division rivals in September, because they want to see things come down to the wire, and they want to give you a chance to control your own destiny.
Yeah.
Now, the D-backs have one of the hardest schedules of any team in baseball remaining. They play an absolute gauntlet to end the season. The Rockies are up there, too. The Dodgers right below them, but because they play each other a lot, which makes sense, obviously. But this is the chance the Rockies actually have the path to win their first ever NLS title, and they can control it. And that's the thing you always want. They don't have to yep. rely on Tony Gwynn Jr. hitting a game-winning triple off Trevor Hoffman to right. make the playoffs like they did in 2000, or to get to the playoffs like they did in 2007. They don't have to rely on other teams. They hold their own destiny in their own hands.
And we don't see that very often throughout Rockies franchise history. But that's what's so exciting about this weekend. If you continue to do things right against the teams you need to beat, you're the ones who control your own destiny. You don't have to rely on, oh man, hope the Padres can get the job done. Hope the Mets can come away with a series win in Los Angeles, which was very unexpected and very cool.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
but they're just so rarely in this position. You got to savor these moments. And we had last night, I tweeted out after that game, they're going to win the damn division. And somebody tweeted back like, whoa, chill. No. This is September. This is what it's about, is getting excited in these moments. Yeah. Exactly. Like, I want to be over the top excited. And if it doesn't go well, it's going to hurt like a motherfucker. But yeah. if it does, that's the whole point. That's what you're supposed to be excited about.
This is why we do this.
Sports.
This is why you're a fan right. of a team.
This
to
is
be excited about
podcast.
The moments that go well.
This is why we started this podcast 5 years ago when they were hot garbage. Because yep. we still wanted to be part of it. Like, this is what we sat around hoping for in 2014.
Like, if you can't enjoy this and you just dwell on everything or wait for the other shoe to drop, then what is the point of even being a fan?
Yeah.
If you're some sad sack fan all the time, even when things are going well. Like we've had people tweeting at us this week. Like, oh, well, they'll blow it.
People just Randy Quaid from Major
yeah.
League.
It's like your first reaction to like DJ LeMahieu hitting a first inning home run was, oh, well, 8 more innings left to blow it. What the hell is the point? Like, get out of here. Like, there's no sense in doing that at all. If you're going to be that way and think that way and have that mindset after something goes right for your team, then you are not allowed to celebrate when things finally go well. I'm sorry.
And I understand the fatalism to a certain extent. Like, you can be fatalistic until September 1st. And now, get on the bandwagon. Because there's one month left.
Yeah.
And we're all going to have fun with it. You know, like, and I think the complete pessimism that you feel as a Rockies fan, pessimism? Is that what I just said?
You sure pessimism. Did. I was gonna let it go, but, we can go back.
The straight pessimism that you feel as a Rockies fan is warranted because you've been hurt throughout the entirety of franchise history. But I think it's also, to a certain extent, I know from our point of view, it's also somewhat tongue in cheek a lot of the time too. You kind of have to play up the role of everything is terrible and it's always going to be terrible, because it guards you A, when sure. things actually are terrible, but B, it's kind of fun to be a little downtrodden sometimes, because then when things are good, you appreciate how good they are. And that's what it's about. And not to speak from a larger philosophical context in life, but like, I went through a stretch of life a couple of years ago that was not great. And what it's helped me do is appreciate things that are good now. Like, I force myself, when I'm sitting there doing a broadcast in Panama and there's 8,500 people in an 8,000 seat stadium, they've closed the gates and state police are turning people away at the door because they can't pack any more people into the stadium to support a group of
safely
14 yeah. and 15 year old kids who are playing for their country, and I'm sitting there broadcasting that game, like, I make myself sit there and appreciate how cool that is. And to be able to do that as a sports fan sometimes is difficult, because you're always thinking about, well, what's next? What's next? What's next?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to live in the moment. Sometimes you have to realize, like, even if it doesn't go well tomorrow, the Rockies are a game and a half up on the Dodgers in first place. The Dodgers structured their rotation so Clayton Kershaw has to match up with John Gray in Coors Field on a Friday night in September with the Rockies leading the division. Like, if you can't take a moment and pause and think, that is so damn cool, then, like, I don't know, man, I can't really help you.
Well, and this is the time for the Rockies to prove they belong on that stage, because this, if this team makes the playoffs with the way they have been playing, constructed, whatever, it would infuriate so many people, because teams with a negative run differential aren't supposed to make the playoffs. Teams with a first inning ERA over 7.5 aren't supposed to make the playoffs. Teams with a bottom five bullpen aren't supposed to make the playoffs. Like, and here they are, 23 games to go with a game and a half lead, controlling their own destiny. Like, how amazing is that?
It's incredible. This is the weirdest season.
This season, just the weirdest season. We were talking about this on Twitter the other day. We have to have this season be remembered for a playoff run, because so many stupid things have happened in this season that we have to make, because we're going to remember the season no matter what.
Yeah.
So we want to make those things, those memories, good memories. So have them for a team that made the playoffs, to remind us all when we bitched constantly about Ian Desmond, or, you know, we brought the Scott Oberg meme into existence, or, you know, all these different things that there's no reason why this team should be in the playoffs with all the games that they have blown in the late innings, how their, you know, super bullpen completely exploded on them. Davis and Shaw and McGee
immediately right out of the gate in April.
Yeah. And, like, you know, Davis has been picking it back up lately, I guess, whatever. It's still a bottom five bullpen in the league. Like, in teams, like, just flat out negative run differential teams are not supposed to make the playoffs.
No,
flat out. They're minus eight right now as we stand.
In fact, throughout baseball history, only six such teams have ever made the postseason. Oddly enough, they all won the division. I guess maybe not that oddly, because the wild card has only been around since 1995, but only two of these teams have been post-1995, and they were division winners also. 1981, the Kansas City Royals went under eight runs. They were negative eight in run differential. They went 50-53 in a weird split season. They won the second half American League West title. They were swept in the league division series. That was back in the weird labor era in Major League Baseball with strikes and all kinds of strange shit. 1984, the Royals again, 13 runs under in their run differential. They went 84-78. They won the American League West. They were swept in the league championship series. 1987, two teams did it. The San Francisco Giants were negative nine. They went 90-72, won the National League West. They were swept in the division series. In 1987, the Minnesota Twins, 20 runs under the other team in 87 to do it. They won the World Series. They went 85-77, won the American League West, and won the World Series. Like, what? The Giants that year won the division, swept in the championship series. The Twins went all the way through and won the World Series with a negative run differential. That makes no sense. 2005, the illustrious year for the National League West that was 2005, the San Diego Padres had a negative 42 run differential. They went 82 and 80 and won the division, and they got crushed in the league division series, I think, by the Cardinals that year.
Yeah, I believe so.
And then in 2007, those Arizona Diamondbacks, the Eric Burns Arizona Diamondbacks, went 90 and 72 with a negative 20 run differential, and they got crushed by the Rockies in the LCS. That's it. That is the entire list of teams with negative run differentials making it onto the postseason.
Well, and that 1987 Twins team had George Frazier on it, which is why they had a negative run differential. Just saying, George Frazier, bring him back. He brought sanity to the broadcasts, apparently. He was the only glue that held it together.
God, it really seems like that might actually be true. We're not going to get into a whole thing about it, no. But I've been forced to watch Fox Sports talking about AT&T Sports Network over the last several days because I've been staying at my mom's house. And, oh boy,
they're not prepared for a playoff push, it seems like.
Yeah. It's a tie game in the sixth inning against a division opponent in which your team is playing as a first place team to try to gain some ground in the division race. And they're talking about like a concert that they all went to.
Talking about doing wacky like morning show antics, like putting his pie in Spilly's face. And it's
I watch it and I think Jenny deserves a real job. Jenny's too good for all of us. She's just so good and so talented, and it's being thrown away, and it makes me sad. But anyway, so let's talk about some other things that have gone on recently. Trevor Story last night, 3 home runs. He hit a baseball like 7 miles, I think, combined.
505 feet.
The fact that the 505-foot home run is what on any other night, his one prior to that was like 489.
It was 460. So he hit nearly 1,400 feet of home runs last night.
So ridiculous. Like a 460-foot homer, if he had just hit that last night, because it was weird, like he swings and he falls down on the follow-through of that swing, you would have remembered that as a highlight reel homer forever.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He follows it up by hitting a 505-foot home run.
Longest in the StatCast era.
Longest in Coors Field history. It surpassed the legendary Mike Piazza home run off of Darren Holmes from like 97 pre-Humidor.
Yeah, these like, you know, Giancarlo Stanton home runs are finally off the record books. Finally, you know.
Thank God. Not in Miami, though, where he once broke his own face. Thanks, Jamie Moyer.
Yeah.
Well. Broke his own face on the video board. The night that Trevor Story had last night, that was one of those moments where I think you look back in October and think, yeah, without that game, I don't think they win the division.
And the beautiful thing about it now is that do we have to talk about Trevor Story in the National League MVP race? Has he actually passed Nolan Arenado as the most valuable player on this team in the year of our Lord 2018?
Well,
that's a real question.
That is a real question. Yesterday, according to, I think it was Fangraphs War, among National League position players, it was like Nolan 1, Story 2.
Story is ahead of Nolan in Baseball Reference War as well.
Wow.
Now, Nolan has struggled lately, and that's fine. But
right.
Trevor Story right now, look at this NL ranks. He is 8th in batting average. He is 3rd in slugging. He is 6th in OPS. He is 4th in hits. He leads the league in doubles. He is 5th in stolen bases as well. He is tied for 3rd in home runs. He is the most extra base hits of anybody in the National League. I mean, he's going to be putting up a year that only Alex Rodriguez has ever had as a shortstop previously. And that's what it comes down to. As a shortstop who was playing arguably Gold Glove defense this year as well at the shortstop position, he's hitting .298 with 31 homers, 95 runs batted in, 39 doubles, and 25 stolen bases. The only other shortstop in Major League Baseball history to hit 30 home runs, drive in 100, and steal 25 bags was Alex Rodriguez in 1998 when he became part of the 40-40 club.
And I think he was pretty good.
That's the only time that has ever happened in the history of Major League Baseball. It's only happened 4 times that a shortstop's even gone 30-30. And he's 5 stolen bases away from doing that. I mean, it's not out of the realm that Nolan might lose the MVP this year because people are voting for Trevor Story instead.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's definitely a possibility. I don't think either one of them would win it because I think that's just the way this stupid voting process always goes with Rockies players. I think if anything, right, it'll be like last year and it'll just be two guys or more siphoning off votes from each other. You know, well, I guess it's not or more this year because there's really nobody else who's in the conversation. But last year, obviously, Charlie Blackmon and Nolan Arenado took some votes away from each other.
The NL MVP is completely wide open right now. Yeah, Matt Carpenter, really Javi Baez, Freddie Freeman, Christian Yelich, even Paul Goldschmidt. You know, still nobody on the Dodgers. It's completely wide open at this point. But Fangraphs actually had a really great article on Trevor Story saying that he's having an all-time improvement season. And it basically detailed his strikeout rate getting cut by about 10%. He still strikes out a lot. We know he's going to strike out a lot. But he's cut his strikeout rate from 60% to 50%. And this was even before his 3-home run game last night. This article came out. And they're saying that he's been much more aggressive this season, which has led to more home runs, fewer strikeouts, obviously, because if you swing at pitches earlier in the counts, you don't get deep counts on you. You don't strike out as much. That's kind of how that works. But 9 first pitch home runs this year for Trevor Story. That is second in all of baseball, only behind Bryce Harper. He's hitting .488 on the first pitch this season. And that has been the key to his improvement, being more aggressive at the plate. And my God, the numbers have jumped considerably. I mean, he's raised his OPS 250 points. He's raised his batting average nearly 60 points, his OBP nearly 50 points. I mean, he's already got a career high in extra base hits, home runs, RBI. He's also stolen 25 bags when he came in with 15 career steals entering this season. I mean, there is a really honest to God legitimate argument that Trevor Story is the best player on the Rockies this year.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. Even 2 weeks ago, we'd have been like, oh, that's crazy. He could be the best player on the Rockies this year. And one of the great things, too, is that people are going to say Coors. And listen, Trevor Story's overall numbers this year greatly skewed towards Coors Field. He's got about 300 points in OPS, 11 more homers. Everyone, for the most part, will have better numbers at Coors Field offensively because that's just how Coors Field works. Not just the power, but the singles that fall in, whatever. You look at the second half. We're on September 6th right now. We've played 40-plus games in the second half so far. Trevor Story at home in the second half is hitting .284, an .885 OPS, 5 homers, 11 RBI. All 5 of those home runs, by the way, came in that Giants series that would just happen. And I think 8 of the RBI came during that Giants series. Think about that for a second. So in the second half, Trevor Story did not have a home run at Coors Field, had barely driven any single runs. And those numbers are including that Giants series where he went like 9-for-9 with 9 homers. So .284, .885 OPS, 5 homers, 11 RBI in 21 games at home in the second half. Now, on the road in that exact same time, 22 games, he's hitting .337 with a .1016 OPS, 6 homers, and 16 runs batted in. That is Trevor Story on the road. Started out very slowly on the road this year. In the second half, he has been one of the best hitters in baseball away from home. People are still going to say Coors because the overall numbers, and I get it, but that's also stupid. Trevor Story has been a monstrously better hitter on the road in the second half, and that's not a small sample size. That is, 2 months worth, a month and a half worth of games.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Like, unbelievable. He's been able to do, and he's played incredible defense, too.
Yes.
And I think, you know, when Trevor Story came up, we assumed, like, slightly above replacement-level defense and the potential for an impact bat. And he has turned himself into an elite defender and an elite impact bat. You know, I don't think anybody thought that it would be anything other than a step down from Troy Tulowitzki to Trevor Story. And I don't think it has been at all.
Well, and
last year
Trevor Story
was
really
story.
He had a tough year, and you know, especially coming off of his incredible 2016, his rookie year, where he ended up getting hurt midway through. Like, we thought he was going to be a huge key in this for this team, and it didn't really work out that way. He had a really really tough year. Like, it's all I can do to not go back to July 27, 2015 and start retweeting a bunch of people's tweets about Troy Tulowitzki and how the team's going to be screwed. I would honestly love to do that, but you know, I'm not that mean yet, I don't think.
Yeah, there was a lot of like, I remember, you know, people saying I'm a Cubs fan now and I'm done with this organization.
Oh yeah,
forever.
Oh, you know, people and, literally transferred to the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that too.
How fun was that?
Yeah. It was all adorable. I just, you know, it's like the old Jerry Seinfeld thing. Like, you're really just cheering for laundry. Like, I'm not going to give up on an organization just because they trade one guy. But there are a lot of those people. And Trevor Story has been more than adequate. Not only has he been more than adequate as a replacement, look at what Troy Tulowitzki's done since that trade.
Hasn't played a single inning this year.
And it's not to knock Troy Tulowitzki for not being able to stay healthy, but you traded away an oft-injured, supremely talented, but unreliable due to his health component of your organization, and one that, you know, had not character questions or concerns, but maybe wasn't the best clubhouse presence. You shed that from your organization and you bring in a guy like Trevor Story, who you've drafted, developed, stuck with through some tough times on his developmental pathway, gotten to the major leagues and turned into a bona fide star. And the guy you traded away, you know, I think that's, if you had to evaluate a win or loss in the Tulo trade, I don't think it comes out of the trade. I think it comes out of Trevor Story being the guy who graduates.
Right. I
think
Trevor Story being
Trevor Story.
You,
know,
you gave Trevor Story an opportunity. Yeah.
Because he got that opportunity. Exactly.
And honestly,
hashtag won the trade. I guess we just solved it.
And when they traded him, you know, like, it was thought that, oh, Brendan Rodgers will take over in a couple of years. Yeah. It'll be Trevor Story holding the mantle, keeping the position warm
really
for a year.
Fallen off of Trevor Story for a while.
Yeah, well, because, you know, well, we talked about this a lot through Trevor Story's development, that he would go to a level, he would really struggle, and then he would repeat that level, and he would dominate it. And that was pretty much the entire path that he ran through up until he got to the big leagues, where he dominated initially and then really struggled.
Yeah. Yeah. Their ability to stick with him, you know, especially after last year. And I think even coming into this year, you know, I know we said on the show, if Trevor Story doesn't have a bounce back year, then I think both he and DJ are somewhat expendable, because Brendan Rodgers is going to be ready. And, you know, that certainly is the case. Brendan Rodgers was terrific this year in Double A, made his way up to Triple A for the first time. What do you do now? I mean, the Rockies have a very good problem in that they are overloaded with middle infield talent. They have Trevor Story. They have DJ LeMahieu, but they also have Brendan Rodgers. They also have Garrett Hampson. It's a very good problem for them to have. And I'm glad I'm not the one who has to try to figure out what the best road forward is. But it doesn't seem like you can really go wrong if you're going to figure out, you know, who of those four guys are going to be your two regulars moving ahead past 2018. You got some really good options, and that's an exciting thing.
Yeah. And God, it's been so fun to watch him this year blossom into this player. I mean, it's kind of like what we've seen a couple years ago when Nolan really started taking the next step. When Nolan came up, like, he was a very, you know, swing happy strikeout guy, didn't really walk a lot, just wanted to hit home runs, had great defense, of course. But seeing him become a much better hitter over the last few years has been awesome. And that's kind of what we're seeing with Trevor Story this year. We're seeing someone who was given an opportunity succeed in ways that I don't think anybody dreamed possible for Trevor Story. I mean, he's going to be putting himself up there with one of the all-time great shortstop seasons.
Pretty amazing.
It's awesome. And he's a huge reason why the Rockies are where they are. You know, it's, you know, Nolan's had a great year offensively the last couple of weeks, not so much, but, you know, you count on Nolan to pick it back up again. Without Trevor Story, where is this offense?
Yeah.
I mean, DJ's been he's taken a step back a little bit. Chuck's not having the typical Chuck year that we have come to expect from him. You know, Cargo's been all right for the most part, but, you know, he's not the same Cargo that we got to know and love. Desmond's been a black hole for all but 1 month of the season. No offense from the catcher.
Blocked.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. I don't know if you block people on podcasts.
Blocked.
Without Trevor Story, the Rockies are not in this position where they are right now.
No. No, they're not. And they really needed somebody like Trevor Story to be able to pick up that slack this year. And it's been pretty incredible to see. You know, I mean, he hasn't even really had a stretch where he's just gone ice cold for more than, you know, and
yeah.
He was so feast or famine the first couple of years of his career and throughout his minor league career that I think he expected at some point that would happen this year, and it really hasn't.
No, I mean, his worst month was April, or he had 250 with an 850 OPS or 750 or no 850 OPS. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
all right.
Like,
deal with that.
Like average by month, 245, 257, 333, 358, 288, 500, obviously in September. I mean, the OPSs have been over 800 at least in every month.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, pretty good.
He's been way more consistent than I think any of us thought that he could ever be.
It's so great.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's so fun. While we're blowing up Trevor Story, let's blow up some other dudes on this roster who have been fantastic as of late.
Fine.
Armand Marquez has been a freaking revelation.
Herman Marcus, as they always say
on
the radio, which is so weird. Like, they can't pronounce Marquez. Like, they just say Marcus all the time. It's like, that's not really his name.
And it seemed like that was just like a very – I'm assuming at some point that there must have been a conversation where maybe Marquez came out and said, hey, this is how I say my name.
Because
it was just like one day
they just – all of a sudden it was Herman different. Marcus. Like, it was weird. Okay.
It was a little weird. But in three of his last six starts – Ramon Marquez has gone double-digit strikeouts, which he had not done through his first 22 starts this year. Had 10 strikeouts, gave up 10 hits, but only 3 runs over 6 innings against the Pirates back on the 8th of August, which really was part of that one ugly swing in August. But he struck out 10 and walked 2 in that game. And his last two starts against the Padres – in Petco Park, 8 innings, 2 hits, 2 runs, 13 strikeouts, 1 walk. Then against the Giants 2 days ago, 6 2/3, 7 hits, 2 runs, both earned, 1 homer, 2 walks, 11 strikeouts. The ERA has dropped from its high point of the season of 5.53 on June 24th to 4.05 after his start on September 4th. Like, shaving a run and a half off of your ERA starting in June is not an easy
starting thing. Starting in late June.
In late June, yeah. In your second to last start of June.
His last 12 starts, he is 6-1, hashtag pitcher wins, with a 2.55 ERA. He struck out 100 batters in 81 and a third innings. He has only walked 17 in that time. Opponents hitting 197. Off him, he is the only pitcher in Rockies history to strike out 11 or more batters in back-to-back starts, only the fourth ever to strike out double digits in back-to-back starts, and he has been the reason why the Rockies are where they are with their pitching staff, because John Gray coming back from AAA and being the pitcher that we all thought he was going to be, the pitcher that he was for the most part last year, that's been much needed. Kyle Freeland taking the next step and becoming more of an ace this year. But you needed a third, and Herman Marquez had shown flashes, of course, in the past, but we're seeing right now the development of one of the great pitchers, young pitchers in the National League, one of the most unheralded pitchers in the National League, because this is, you know, what, almost 2.5 months of pretty much domination from Herman Marquez.
Just in August alone, 6 starts, 2-1, 2.14 ERA, 53 strikeouts to 9 walks in 42 innings. He gave up 26 hits in 42 innings in August. Like, he has been a freak. Just an absolute freak lately.
Yes.
And it's something the Rockies very much needed, because you knew that Kyle Freeland was going to be good the rest of the way, because Kyle Freeland has shown no signs of slowing down this season. But beyond that, I mean, Tyler Anderson has really started to struggle. Chad Bettis has disappeared somewhat. Obviously isn't a relief role now, but was on the disabled list. Antonio Senzatella, I'm still not sure that the experiment with him as a starting pitcher is worth it, especially at this time of the year.
Yeah.
But it is they needed somebody else to be able to step up, and Marquez is doing it in a massive time of the season.
And you see him pitch, and it's 97 to 99. He's got an incredible curveball that guys clearly don't pick up the spin on, because they take bad swings Tony Wolters has been instrumental in buying him those extra strikes with that curveball, because a curveball is a pitch that dips low, and especially with the late movement that Herman Marquez's curveball has, he needs that frame job at the bottom of the strike zone to get that pitch to be called a strike. And if he gets that pitch called a strike, he can keep getting it lower and lower and lower for guys to swing, because they have to. They're baited into it. And Tony Wolters is one of the best in baseball at grabbing that low strike. And that's what I think one of the big reasons why Marquez has been as good as he has been lately. Of course, you know, it helps when you can throw 98. But even around like the office at Fox Sports, like Kevin Burkhardt, he always texts me when Marquez is pitching, because he's like, he saw him pitch in the Braves series and said, "Why didn't you tell me how good this guy was?" And so since then, like, he's been watching every one of his starts and like sending me clips of Herman Marquez. Like, he's like, "This guy, he's like, where did this guy come from? He's got like Justin Verlander type stuff." And it was right around that time against the Astros, where he went up against Justin Verlander and outpitched him in that game in Houston. Yep. In that game, Marquez went 7 innings, gave up 3 hits, 1 run, struck out 7. And the Rockies won that game 5-1. I mean, he's been taking the ball and proving that we should definitely count out Kevin Padlo at this point.
Yeah.
But Marquez was the throw-in on the Corey Dickerson-Jake McGee trade. I mean.
Yeah. I was texting, I know a scout in the Rays organization, and I asked him on the day of that trade, like, what, you know, do you forecast much for Herman Marquez going forward? And he was like, "No, not really. Like, maybe a back end of the rotation kind of guy." Like, was not that high on him. And that is a whiff.
Yeah.
Looks like at this stage.
And considering the Rays are a team that always has a pipeline of young pitchers coming up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't have done with Herman Marquez there. Like,
yeah.
they couldn't see what Herman Marquez could become. Like, come on.
And you know, maybe they did to a certain extent. And they were like, "Well, I mean, we got Blake Snell, we got all these other dudes. Like, we don't
Ryan Honeywell, Jose De Leon. Like, you know,
If they ever get healthy, but yeah. Like, they have guys that they figured had bigger upsides. So they brought in, you know, Corey Dickerson as part of the deal to move him out of town along with Jake McGee. And maybe it just felt like a throw in of, "Well, we've got other guys that seem
right.
Like they've got better future career potential."
But kudos, man, to the Rockies scouting department at that
point.
Yeah,
that is one hell of a pickup for the Rockies. So Marquez has been fantastic. Herman Marquez, I think, without him, you know, he's a little bit more unsung of a guy, but without him going out there every 5 days, I also don't think they're in this position. He's
no.
not out there every day like Trevor Story, but if Herman Marquez is not in that role to be able to stabilize the rotation as somebody outside of Kyle Freeland, I don't think they're in this spot right now.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Do not sleep on John Gray either. Your, my, and our pal John Gray, since returning from his little, seance away from the major leagues, 8 starts, 3-0 record, 3.33 ERA, 39 strikeouts to 10 walks, 41 hits allowed, over 54 innings of work in July. The couple of starts he made in July, obviously, he was brilliant, put up a 1.66 ERA, 4.01 ERA in August, and even though his stuff wasn't at its best, he still ended up winning his only 2 decisions in that month. Actually, only had 1 decision in that month, but has just kept his team in the position to win. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think the Rockies have won something like 23 out of John Gray's last 27 starts or something like that.
Yeah, it's
something ridiculous.
It's
like
something
even in the games in which he was really struggling, you could tell that they were still, for the most part, in a position to win games. John Gray's
they won
worst
10 of the
start,
last 11.
Crazy. His worst start numbers-wise this year was really that one start against the Giants on May 19th when he gave up 5 over 3 2/3. He had another start against the Giants on June 28th in which he gave up 5 over 4 innings. Then he came back and went 7 or more in each of his next 3 starts. And that was after the move down, which it seemed like it really turned him around.
Yeah.
And I think it was as simple as John Gray going back down there and the Rockies saying to him, like, "Just remember what it's like to be John Gray. Like, we're not going to break things down mechanically. You don't have to refine your stuff. There's nothing that we're really going to change you're this good. Like, why don't you just go down and shove in Albuquerque for a little while, and we'll see you back up here when you're John Gray again.
Only thing I worry about, just last two starts, only two strikeouts. That's weird for John Gray. Yeah, that is a little strange. That's strange.
Especially coming off of, you know, that game against the Braves in Atlanta on the 16th. He had nine strikeouts and seven innings in that game.
Right.
So that has been a little weird to not see the stuff be as good recently.
At least the swing and miss stuff. Like, I mean, in the last start against the Padres, he gave up two runs in six innings, only seven hits, but he only struck out one batter. So, I mean, and that could be guys being more aggressive, not wanting to get in deep counts to get that slider. I could see that as well. But, you know, that's why tomorrow's start is so damn important.
Yeah.
You got to be good John Gray facing up with Clayton Kershaw with the Rockies a game and a half lead in the the division in early September.
Yep.
You want to ask PDP? We got a
ton.
Yeah,
let's do it. Let's do it. I got like 15 minutes. So yeah, let's do it. Let's roll through some.
Let's just roll through some of these. All right. Is this from our good pal Dan Lucero at Dan Lucero Show? Is this the most meme-friendly Rockies team of all time, or is this just Rockies Twitter hitting full stride?
You know, I think it's Rockies Twitter hitting full stride, and I think it's due in large part to the meme king, Connor Farrell.
He's burdened by those own memes.
He is. He's burdened by the memes he helped create. But I think, you know, Connor being our true comedic north, I think he has inspired – you know, it's like when the Broncos acquired Peyton Manning, and it was just – he makes everybody around him better. I think that's Connor for Rockies Twitter. And I think Connor has been so prolific in his creation of terrific memes. I think it's forced everybody else to step up their game. And, you know, I mean, there are a handful of memes that we created that I'm very proud of. The 100 pence of positives are first and foremost on that list. But I think everything pales in comparison to Connor's body of work. But what it has done is it's made everybody else challenge themselves and think, you know what? I want to create something funny, too. And we've all been able to do that for the most part. So I think it is a very memeable team, and I think it's a great question. But I do think that it's just got a good collection of weird-ass comedic minds on Rockies.
Well, and the best part is that we've, you know, had those memes seep into the actual Rockies broadcasts.
Yes, we have.
You know, the Kyle Freeland guy has been become a thing now. Rockies drill got put onto onto the broadcast.
This is the most ridiculous moment.
I think of course Connor is a big part of that, but I mean, this, I think it's great. I think the Rockies have a lot of really cool memeable guys. I think that we are, you know, for all of our faults, I think when the Rockies do well, I think we are a very well-oiled machine. I will say that.
Yeah, we do have a lot of faults, but we're also we're pretty good when things are going well.
Yes.
That's what I would say. I just opened up all the Ask PDPs. Let me find.
How about from Connor, at another Connor, at Connor Boulin. What is the most nervous you have ever been watching this team?
Game one of the World Series in Boston.
Well,
because it all snowballed for too much away. Longer
because it was like, you know, a 9-0 after the first inning, right?
Right. And it all snowballed so quickly that it was like this additional layer of existential nervousness settled in of like, are they even going to let us play in the major leagues anymore?
I got
like
very
the Rockies
drunk
after 15 seasons of franchise history, making it into the World Series for the first time. And you could just feel the other teams in the National League be like, are you serious? This is what you're going to do? Like, yeah, we went through a 162-game series. You go on this fluky run to make it into the World Series.
And the Padres like, the we played 163 games.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That was probably it. In terms of good nervousness, game 162 in 07,
right,
when they had to win in order to force the playoff, that was probably it. The play-in game was nervousness, but that was like excitement because it was like they're here, they've been on this roll. By that point, they won 13 out of 14. They're gonna do this.
Yeah,
right. But they had lost one game that weekend already to the D-backs. You know, you knew because of the Tony Gwynn Jr. triple and everything that happened in Milwaukee that they had a shot, but they had to win that day on Sunday in order to make it into the play-in game. That game, there were some nerves that game.
They were playing the D-backs, if I remember correctly, like because the D-backs had clinched that
Brandon
Friday
Webb
night.
Pitched on Friday and they clinched.
And so they weren't playing for anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That was what's yours for that?
I mean, the play-in game last year, I just got back from my honeymoon. My wife is a D-backs fan, of course. And so, like, you know, I was getting really, really sick because I had been traveling in Mexico, you know? And so, like, I wanted to do my whole thing and, like, bring, like, a 30-pack of Coors and sit it right next to me and watch the game. And I was, like, so sick, and I had to, like, sequester myself into the other room. And, like, my wife was, like, so nervous to be around me that she went to a bar to watch most of the game. And then when the D-backs were winning, she came home quietly and didn't even tell me and made me dinner while I was, like, throwing, like, cans at the screen and stuff. That was up there for me. That was definitely, I think last year was really tough, because I was like, you know, if they make it through here, like, one, I don't know how my wife is going to respond. Two, like, you know, they go to play
based
the Dodgers.
Based on one joke that I made once about Arizona basketball on Twitter, not well.
Not the best.
Sorry, Nicole. Last year was similar to that game one feel, because it was just like it got so bad early that it was
right.
Like, oh, God.
But then they almost came. And then they almost came back. Like, oh God. That's still the most mad I've ever been at the Rockies is the Archie Bradley triple. That's the most mad I've ever been at this team.
And it was Pat Neshek.
Screw that guy.
He just walked in. He was fun and had a beard and a weird delivery for a minute, and then it was just like, hang on, let me ruin this season. Now I'm going back to Philly. Like, are you serious, man?
Screw that guy. From Zach Wingrovius, one of our good pals, how many World Series would the Rocks need to win before you hear ads like, there's never an offseason for Rockies baseball? Also, what would have to happen for the Broncos to be relegated to KHOW on Sunday afternoons while yours, mine, and our Colorado Rockies crush it on the blowtorch?
It would have to be, I remember after the 2000, I'm going to approach this, which I know is a semi-facetious question. I'm going to approach it from a very literal standpoint, because there's no topic I take more seriously, I think, than the shortcomings of Denver sports media. Sure. I remember after the 07 season, the Broncos going into 07 and 08 were an extremely dislikable team. Like, they were not good. They were just a bunch of assholes on
That's
that team.
True.
Like, it was Jay Cutler and Brandon Marshall. When Brandon Marshall was, I've always had a soft spot for Brandon Marshall because I think he's a very tortured soul.
Well, it was before like everything,
but it was
where
before
he like made his like,
man,
culpa before we knew all that, right? Yeah,
yeah,
he was just like, oh, what's up with this dick?
Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was just like, why is this guy keep getting into trouble?
Yeah.
Jay Cutler was just a smarmy, insufferable jerk all the time.
Yeah.
There was not much to like about that team, and that was like when they signed Travis Henry. I think.
Oh yeah.
And like, I remember
nine kids by nine different wives.
If Denver was ever going to become a baseball town, the door was open for the Rockies, and not become a baseball town, because I think the concept of baseball town, football town is all a misnomer. I think Denver used to be a tremendous sports city. There was in the mid 90s, in the golden era of Denver sports, every team sold out except for the Nuggets, because they were garbage back then. But every team sold out all the time. The Avalanche sold out like their first 10 years of games in Denver. The Rockies were the same way. The Broncos sold out every game from 1975 through 2000, whatever it was. But that was the chapter where it looked most like the Rockies had the door open to being able to take eyeballs away from the Broncos in town. And then the Rockies went out and pissed all over themselves in 2008. You know, it turned into a whole disaster that way. So if I'm being
well, the Broncos still weren't good then either, you know, and like they,
The Broncos were terrible for a while after that. And then the Josh McDaniels thing, and then it was just an abomination. If the Rockies were to play in multiple World Series over the span of 5 years, I think they get to a semi-even footing. But it would be – the Rockies would really have to win three World Series in a decade in order for them to ever – push the Broncos off of KOA and onto
personally,
KO. Like, that'll never
I think you need playoff games in Denver. I think people forgot how incredible those playoff games and the atmosphere in Denver was
you
during
need
those
regularly.
Playoff games. Last year they made the playoffs, which is awesome. It was one game and it was in Arizona, which it was in like a funeral home. You know, that's what Chase Field is.
Exactly.
So
and the Rockies have never made the playoffs in back-to-back years. So when you get these tastes of how incredible playoff baseball is, with the exception of 07 and 09 being in close proximity, you get them in these little fleeting bursts and then they're gone.
Yeah, but 08 was such a garbage year between that. Like, people forgot like they made the playoffs 2 years
people
before.
People gave up. People gave up on that team in 2008.
Yeah, 08 sucked.
So they would need, and that's what's frustrating about where you are as a, you know, a middle market team, is the Rockies don't really have, you know, I think we've talked about this before. You can't say it outright, But I think Dick Montfort's "we need to be making the playoffs 2 out of every 5 years" is probably pretty realistic. I think
it absolutely is. You shouldn't say that.
But you shouldn't say it to the friggin' media.
He's right.
I think it's realistic.
But you shouldn't say it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think they need that, and they need to make deep playoff runs, and they need to be compelling in the years in which they're not contending. If you go from throwing all of your resources into a 3-year window of contention, you make the playoffs 2 years out of that window, and only 1 year you make it past the wild card game, people aren't going to give a shit, because the years in which you don't make it, if you're losing 90 to 95 games, then you're just the same old Rockies again.
Rocks road to 100. Get that shitty Twitter account back.
So you have to make it a sustained run of success over the course of like a decade in order to even get yourselves back to the point of, yeah, maybe this is something that will actually get airtime on a radio station sometime that isn't opening day.
Good question, though.
That is a great question. From Ryan Ladika, friend of the PDP, longtime follower. Quote, what time of day is considered brunch as opposed to just breakfast and lunch?
I've always considered brunch to be after 10 a.m. and before noon.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a sweet spot for brunch.
Yeah.
To me, if it's afternoon, it's lunch. Brunch also, by the way, can only occur on weekends and holidays.
Yeah.
You can't have a brunch on just like a Wednesday.
Yeah, unless you're unemployed. Then every time is brunch.
Yeah, then it's always brunch.
Yeah.
And then you're just a loser. Brunch is something that's only done by like the crust of society, or the people who want to pretend they're the crust of society, or just the total losers.
I love brunch. Yeah,
I know, me too. But like, you know, you pretend like it's something that you do because you're a young person who has some disposable income in your 30s and your 20s, and you're doing it because it's fun. But you don't see like, it's not like a blue collar dude in his 40s has brunch.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So it's either that group of like young people who are like somewhat of the crust of society, or just like you never change out of sweatpants.
I feel like in 8 years, I'm going to try to pushing the brunch concept onto, you know, people in my 40s. So
okay,
because I love champagne and orange juice, man. It's a good drink for me. All right, from another Nick at 303 to NYC. Which September call up will have the biggest impact this month?
Just to put a middle finger in the faces of everybody in the front office, I'm going to go Raimel Tapia. I don't know if he'll ever see the field at this rate.
Right.
But I'm going to say Tapia goes out and just crushes for the month of September.
And that's the problem with a contending team, is that Bud Black, of course you have 40 people, you know, on the 40-man roster to bring people. You have expanded rosters, whatever, you can bring people into the game that you wouldn't normally have. But he's going to dance with the dudes that got him to this point.
Yeah,
so there's not going to be a lot of guys that are just coming up now.
We probably won't have many Chris Nelson moments.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
That's pretty much what I'm saying. I think if anybody, it would have to be through an injury, which is too bad, of course.
Yeah.
You don't want that to happen necessarily. And Ryan McMahon does not count as a September call-up, even though, you know, he should be getting more playing time. We've beaten that to death.
Yeah.
No, he won't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It would have to be some kind of like bullpen arm, someone like DJ Johnson or something. But like at the same time, DJ Johnson is not going to get high leverage situations, you know, if they can help it. You know, like Garrett Hampson is not going to get much playing time because, you know, DJ is going to be playing second and Trevor's going to be at short. You know, if anybody, it's going to be somebody filling in for Nolan for when he needs a day off. So,
and that's going to be
Ryan McMahon. So, I don't see in a situation like this, which is a good thing, you know, in theory, that you don't need September call-ups to come and have a big impact. But I'd be very much surprised. Someone like Noah Cuevas has already made an impact. He had the game-winning hit on Monday on Labor Day against the Giants. Like someone like that who can come in and play some outfield and pinch hit. Unless Matt Holliday counts as a September call-up. If that's the case, then Matt Holliday's had the biggest impact.
Yeah, I like that. From our good buddy Matt Hansen, quote, are they ever going to win another home game in a normal, boring
game? God, no. They never, ever win boring, like, 10-1 home games. They don't. They can. But that's why it's serving the purpose of the blessed season. Negative run differential division champions.
Yeah.
So that's what they do. And, you know, and when you're in these meetings and everyone, people are dismissing the Rockies because they're run differential and all this stuff, I got to speak up and be like, you know what? Like, yes, of course, that doesn't happen a lot when negative run differential wins the division. You went through the list earlier. Like, but the reason why they're doing that is because they win all of these games by 3 runs or less. And when they lose, they get trounced. Like,
and that's fine.
Whatever. Like, no, like, I'm listen, okay like, with that. Run differential is a stat that almost always brings the best teams to the top. Almost always. But almost always. It is one of those stats that can have exceptions. Like, the Rangers a few years back won 95 games with a plus +8.
Yeah.
Like, if the Rockies end up doing that, they're going to be something like that this year.
Wasn't that one of the jerk stat accounts? I don't know what it is about the stats guys on Twitter.
If you're an internet stats guy, you are
say.
An asshole, and yeah, I don't understand.
Jerk. With the exception of Anthony and other friend of the PDP, James Smythe, because they're both gainfully employed. If you're just some other stats guy, for whatever reason, you just have to be just the biggest jerk on the internet. Yeah. But one of them threw out at us last year when they were struggling with run differential. Look at the Rangers last year. How'd that work out for them?
They made the playoffs. They won the division.
Won the division and made the playoffs?
They were up 2-0 on a series against the Blue Jays. And they
That's right. They were a game away from making the league championship series.
It worked out just fine.
Here's a moment. Now I'm getting a call for my other podcast.
Uh-oh. Wow, this is awkward.
Well, this is uncomfortable. Oh, I didn't think you'd be here. Okay, so with that, I gotta do the one that actually pays me money. So we're gonna wrap this up early-ish. But we gave you an hour. So what else do you want, people? But no, we'll be back next week to break down this this Dodger series and talk about some big baseball coming up.
Let's hope we have more good things to talk about.
It's gonna be fun.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it, please.
We'll talk to you then. Bye.